Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now we have the first installment of a new series called Professional Spotlight, where we look at the lives and careers of people in different fields. And today our focus is on veterinary medicine. I'm joined now by Elise O'Byrne-White, a veterinary surgeon at the DSPCA, and Conor Geraghty, veterinary surgeon with Farmgate Veterinary Group. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Now, you both practice in very different areas, but presumably the attractions of the veterinary life were equally strong for both of you. But we'll start with you, Elise. You took, if you like, the slow route to what you're doing now.
Yeah. Well, I ended up in veterinary by accident more than design, I think. I did a general science degree first in Trinity, and I ended up specializing in zoology. Mm-hmm. And once I specialized in zoology, I did a bit of work in that field and kind of realized that actually it wasn't the ideal job for me. I would like something a little bit more practical and hands-on with animals. So I ended up seeing a bit of practice with a vet down in Waterford. And ever since then, I kind of decided actually veterinary was for me. So I ended up going back and doing graduate entry veterinary in UCD. And here I am now, veterinary surgeon at the SPCA.
It was in the blood, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in the blood. My granddad was a vet, Albie O'Hagan, and he was a vet down at Manor Hamilton. I never actually met him. He passed away before I was born, but he was very well known. So in my mind, I nearly thought the veterinary kind of profession had been taken and it was science sealed delivered, really, and that wasn't my path because it had already been done. But it ended up coming through in the end, I guess.
Now, to be a vet then, you had to go back to college. Did your science and zoology stand you in good stead? I mean, could you take a shorter route to qualification?
Yes. So if you have a general science degree, it makes the 5-year course become a 4-year course. So I did the 4-year graduate entry. The zoology really, there's not a lot of crossover between zoology and the veterinary medicine side of things, but I think of zoology as more nearly David Attenborough style and the veterinary more just veterinary medicine based, more like, a medical career.
Now, your current job, how did you end up in that rather than in a veterinary practice as you were in Waterford, for example?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're very, very different job up here at the DSPCA to private practice. So in final year, we do a rotation up here to kind of get a bit of practice with surgical skills. And I loved it. I just absolutely adored coming up and the atmosphere and just the shelter environment. So once I qualified, I ended up volunteering here, came up for a day a week to just get some experience. And after a couple of months, the veterinary position came up and I applied and I got the job and I've been here ever since.
Now, I'll talk to you in a few minutes about exactly what you do every day, because it's very different work than being in a private practice dealing with small animals. Conor, good morning to you.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you are currently dealing with the bigger animals, but you've got experience with the smaller ones too. Tell us about your road to veterinary practice. I mean, did you always want to be a vet?
I think I probably did from early secondary school anyway, Pat. From a farm and always enjoyed farming. My parents would have been adamant, of course, that I go to college, and it seemed like a natural thing to do then was to take up something like veterinary. So I suppose from the age of 13 or 14, that was my goal, was to become a vet.
Mm. And was it hard to get into veterinary college at the time?
Yeah, I mean, the points for veterinary are quite high. So in my first year of veterinary class, I suppose about 50% of the entrants would have repeated the leaving cert, which was common enough at the time, and as I did myself. But yeah, I mean, it was hard. But once you got there, then it was quite enjoyable, you know.
Now, the only place they do veterinary, I think, is in UCD. So you start off doing, if you like, all the theory and the lab work and all the rest of it. That didn't really appeal to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the early years, there's the foundation science type subjects. And of course, anyone that wants to be a vet wants to get straight into the practical part of it. So once we went into third year on, then it became very enjoyable, I found, much more so than the earlier years. But it is, you know, it is a tough course to get through. It's 5 years. It's fairly intense. As compared to other college courses, the hours are quite long in it, and there's rotations and on-call, etc., towards the later years.
Now, the attraction of the veterinary life, was it the farm animal in which area you now flourish, or was it a small animal veterinary?
I was always drawn to large animals, and I suppose accidentally, as part of my first job, I started doing some equine work, and I still do both. We did a little bit of mixed practice for a while here in the earlier years, but diversified into large animal and equine solely over the last 12 years. So we're happy enough now. Most veterinary practices would do all disciplines. You know, that would be the standard practice, would do all three.
Well, certainly in rural Ireland, that would be the case, where a vet might be dealing with the hamster of the fellow down the road, but equally he would be, or she would be, called out for the birthing of a cow, for instance.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to switch between those disciplines, and I found it much more comfortable to stay in the large animal discipline, and so I suppose that was my decision to make as a practice owner, and that's what I did.
Now, how long before you actually bought into a practice?
Again, I was probably an outlier here as well. I was only 6 months qualified when I bought my local practice here at home due to ill health from the previous owner, and probably a little bit ill-advised in hindsight, but we got there eventually.
So you were a callow youth when you bought into this practice.
It certainly was, yeah.
So I can imagine you going out to farms, for instance, and the farmer knows more about some of the stuff than you do.
Well, possibly, but I think we were both able to play the game on that one. Certainly no more now than I did then, that's for sure.
This time of year, and we're coming out of it now, with lambing season and all the rest, it must be incredibly busy.
It is. It's actually very difficult, you know, to maintain the intensity and the hours that you put in over that period. And, you know, it can be quite tough. And if you end up down a staff member, or by one reason or another, it can be even tougher, you know. So we're just coming out of it now. And I suppose it's like all those sort of things. You get used to it and you become semi-institutionalized into it. But there's no doubt about it. It's a tough period.
Yeah, and many calls would you have to respond to every day, every week?
Well, I suppose during the springtime, you know, there's in this branch, there's four of us here, and you know, the phone could ring 100 times a day during the spring. I suppose then, as you go on into the summertime, it gets a good deal quieter, but it's never fully quiet, because then you have people going on holidays and you have less people around, etc. So we're kind of busy all the time, really.
Now, what about a supply of vets, given there's only one school that qualifies them in this country? And I know people go to Budapest and other places to qualify. Do we have a shortage of vets?
Well, ironically, Pat, we never had more veterinary surgeons on the register. So when I qualified 22 years ago, there was about 2,000 vets on the register, and that's well over 3,300 now. I think the problem we have is that we in large animal practice especially, find, and indeed in all disciplines, practicing disciplines, find it increasingly more difficult to attract graduates into it. And an equal problem is to retain those graduates in practice, in private practice. And it's because of the hours and the, you know, the work-life balance, etc. So it is a challenge that we have to meet, and we haven't met it yet. But
okay, now we know that for example, teaching graduates will go off to the Middle East and earn a lot of money at very low tax rates, and maybe eventually return and buy their own houses and so on. What do vets do if they don't go into where they're needed in practices like yours? I mean, are they going into state jobs? There'd be a lot of inspection jobs which would be funded by the state.
Yeah, so there's always a certain amount of graduates that will go in to join jobs with the Department of Agriculture. There's also many more jobs now in industry, you know, as technical vets for pharmaceutical companies. There's lots of vets go into research posts, teaching posts, and also there's always been young people like to travel, and yeah. You know, there's always been the draw for New Zealand, Australia, Canada, the UK, etc. So, you know, there's always plenty of places and opportunities for someone with a veterinary degree to go, and I suppose we have to rise to the challenge and make it attractive for them to stay here.
Now, Elisa Byrne-White, who's working with the DSPCA, your work is very different to the kind of work that Connor is doing, because you're involved in rescues all the time and animals, be they wild or domesticated animals, in poor condition.
Yeah, exactly. I deal a lot less with people that have animals that have owners and, you know, well cared for animals that you'd usually have in private practice. We tend to have a lot of, you know, stray animals, welfare, neglected animals, and unfortunately cruelty cases. So that means that the animals coming in the door are in a completely different starting point to the usual animals in private practice. And I suppose that's what makes the job very rewarding. There's a high variety of, you know, your guinea pigs, rabbits, cats, dogs. Then we have the fox cubs coming in at this time of year, ducklings, swans, pigeons, seagulls. Every day there's different animals and different creatures in need of different amounts of care. So it makes the job very enjoyable and challenging at the same time. And I suppose from that point, when we get them in the door, they get assessed and they're given a medical plan and we start their treatment. And from that point, then once they're well enough, they go down to rehoming and we try to get them out and to a new family.
And if you, for example, have a fox cub, what do you do when you get it back on its feet or whatever and it's healthy? I mean, you can't just throw it out into the field and say, off you go.
No, and that is very complicated. You know, wildlife rehabilitation is very challenging. So it really depends on how we try to do minimal interference with the wildlife. So as little interaction as possible, and it's kind of minimal medical treatment, and we try to get them back out from where we found them as quickly as possible, which is challenging as well. But that's how we tend to operate with the wildlife. Which is different again from your usual cats and dogs.
Yeah, because I mean, you might end up with ducklings who actually think you're their mother.
Yes, you can. The ducklings can imprint very early on in life, and that's something I would say. At the moment, we're seeing quite a lot of ducklings in, and I think it's important to let people know that ducklings at the moment, their mother is very likely around. If you've happened across 6 to 8 or 9 ducklings in front of you, leave them alone, because the mum's probably hiding nearby, and once you go away, she'll fly back again. So I think sometimes we get a box of ducklings handed up to us that probably actually should have been left alone to begin with, because they're not injured, and it's just the mum is hiding locally, waiting for you to go away.
And what do you do with them? Do you find a surrogate mother somehow?
Well, they're an awful lot of work. We have heat lamps up here, and usually at that point they're feeding, so they feed pretty early by themselves, and we have fosters that take them on. And we've had probably 30, 40 ducklings in this year, and they're doing very well at the moment. We've had no casualties so far.
Now, you say that it's very challenging work, very rewarding work, but I suspect, and I know if it were me and I saw, you know, a fox coming and has been run over by a car with a broken leg and is in distress, I would find it distressing.
Yes, it is distressing. And I think that's a very important factor to consider when you're interested in becoming a veterinarian, that obviously a lot of people have a love for animals who want to go into veterinary, but it's also a very practical job. And unfortunately, you're in the situation a lot of the time that you have to make the hard decisions, and you're in situations where your job and your responsibility is to reduce suffering and pain to the animals. And to do that, sometimes you're kind of the bad guy. I suppose you have to inject them and do the surgeries that they don't understand what you're doing. But yeah, it is distressing, but I think it's also quite a privilege, and that's the whole enjoyable part of the job, is that you get to come in and you can make the difference, and you can turn a very sick and injured animal around in a couple of weeks. So it's very rewarding as well.
What do you make of, you know, an animal which is injured and then you sort it out an operation? They could be confined to cage or whatever for 3 or 4 weeks while they're rehabbing. Do they rehab quicker than humans? Because humans are so introspective, they worry about things, they look back at the past, they look forward to the future. They, you know, do animals heal quicker?
Yes, definitely. They definitely do. And I think you have it on the money there. They don't think about it. You know, they just wake up from surgery and they might have a leg amputated, and sometimes within 30 minutes of waking up from surgery, they're eating, they're drinking, they're going out to the toilet, and life goes on for them. They don't dwell on the past at all. Yeah, they are so robust, and I think that's what you see. That I see that so often every day, even with all the shelter animals, because they come in such poor conditions, and within weeks they are bounding around and going out and with their new families, and they're ready for a whole new life again.
I'll go back to Connor, and then I'll come back to you with the same question, Elise. Connor, what does it take to make a good vet? What kind of attributes do people have? Because I've often suspected with medics for humans as well as veterinarians that you know, points are not the only thing that you'd need. You need something else.
Absolutely, Pat. I think you need to be as well able to and as willing to deal with humans as animals, because it's more than 50% of the job. You need a certain amount of resilience, you know, and you need that passion that you really want to make things better, because without that, it just becomes too difficult. I think if you enjoy it, it's a really enjoyable career. If you're not enjoying it, you know, it's entirely different.
Elise?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I don't think points are essential at all. I definitely wouldn't have gotten the points if I came from a leaving cert. So I think it's a really important characteristic that you're comfortable with pressure, and you're comfortable with maybe failing quite a lot, because in veterinary you don't always have the answers, and sometimes you just have to be comfortable with not having the answers.
Yeah.
That's not easy for a lot of people.
One final point to you both. Text here, 10 years qualified as a vet. One huge issue is that private practice isn't family friendly at all. Most friends I know have joined the department, including myself, so as we can fit in better with family life. Connor?
Absolutely, it's not family friendly. Anytime you have to do on call, you know, it's certainly not family friendly. So I think what's happened over the last number of years is practices have tended to got bigger and rotas have tended to got better, and I think that's probably the future, because the traditional 1-2 person practice, it's just too hard on family life, really. Yeah.
Anyway, you both really enjoy your jobs, I can tell. Elise O'Byrne-White, veterinary surgeon at the DSPCA, and Connor Geraghty, veterinary surgeon with Farmgate Veterinary Group. Thank you both very much for joining us on the programme as part of a new series, Professional Spotlight.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.